Okay, it's 2:00. Let's get started. This week we're going to talk about higher order functions. And what that means is that by the end of the lesson tomorrow, you will understand about lambda the ultimate, and you will know why this is my favorite tie. So let's go back to the beginning. So today we're going to be talking about the functions map, filter, and fold. But before I do that, I will do my usual and ask, are there any questions? None? I have a question. How many people went to the additional tutorial that was at 1:00 today?
I have by accident. I was there, but there were no tutors, I guess.
Oh, we had students, but no tutors.
Yeah.
That sounds like a bug.
Yeah. I don't know.
My apologies for that. So there will be an additional tutorial tomorrow at 2:00. And are the people who went today free to go to that one? So just hands up if you did go to the additional tutorial today, or tried to go, rather. One hand, two hands. Half a hand, one hand. Okay, so can you go tomorrow? Can you go tomorrow? Oh, did you have a hand up as well? Can you go tomorrow? Yes. Two yeses.
I just wasn't by accident.
You were there by accident. You tripped and fell into a tutorial that didn't exist. And you were there on purpose, but there was also no tutor?
I wasn't there.
The person behind you.
I decided to go there.
So you went there, but there was no tutor? Yes, about, you sent everybody an email.
Well, I told
you that I was going to... Oh, yes, you're in my section, and you sent an email to me saying that you were going to go to the additional tutorial.
Yeah,
right. Can you go tomorrow?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay. Right. Okay, any other questions? Okay. So, yes. What time? The test, so there will be a class test next Monday. It will be here at this time. Some of you have special needs and have special arrangements for tests. I believe that if you have that, then the ITO will be in touch with you about your arrangements. A few people need special rooms for testing. Yes? If you want to see what the questions on the class test are like, if you look at the web page, you'll see lots of examples from previous years. They will be quite similar to that. Yes? Is how programs are written for the test important? Well, you're writing them out by hand on a sheet of paper.
How the program works.
Yeah, no, I'm answering your question. You're writing out the program on a sheet of paper, and I'm going to read it, or somebody else is going to read it and decide if it does what it's supposed to do. Right? As usual, right, pretend that I am a psychopath who knows how to give you a grade, and that I will be unhappy if I can't easily read the program. So write something that's easy to read. Yes?
Can we use our laptops during the test?
Can you use laptops during the test? No. No, and it's a closed book test. Okay. And that's mainly just so that you learn the material in advance. You're not expected to memorize anything by rote. We give you the names of the functions that you need, as you'll see if you look at the ones from previous years. So we're not expecting you to memorize names of functions. That's silly. But you should know the material well, because you're only going to have 35 minutes to write two programs. It's not very long. Yes? Well, do you remember the stupid computer and how I told you you have to be able to think like a stupid computer? That's the only way you'll have available for testing out your programs. And of course, we would much prefer that you could actually sit down in front of a computer to to do the exam. That is exactly what happens for your final exam. We'd like to arrange to do that for the class test. We've tried to do so, and simply the scheduling makes it impossible. All of you have different classes at different times, and freeing up the time just for something as simple as a two-hour class exam that you can all come to isn't possible. So that's why the class exam is done here, sitting in here. It's 35 minutes because some people need extra time, so you add that up, and that adds up to our full hour. So that's why things are done the way they are. Yes? What happens if you fail the class test? Then you will realize that you have to study much harder. Right, so you'll remember I told you on the first day what the marks were. Class test counts 10% towards your mark. Final exam counts 90% towards your mark. So you can see that even if you got zero out of the 10%, that won't very seriously affect your score. But seriously enough that I hope you'll take seriously doing the class test. Because this is the reason we do it, right, is this is your opportunity to see how well you understand things. That's the reason for doing it. Yes? Can you retake the class test? No. Yes?
Can all the data define your examination?
Sorry? Do I know the date of the final examination? Not yet. We will inform you when it's been scheduled. Okay, those were excellent questions. Thank you for those. Any other questions? Yes?
Will today's lecture be part of the class test? Or?
Will the material from today's lecture be part of the class test? No. The class test covers material through last week. You can use the material from today's lecture if you want to, but you don't need it to do the class test. Yes? The final exam is done in a two-hour period. The class exam is done in a 35-minute period. Final exam, you get to use a computer. Class exam, you sit in here and do it on paper. Okay. Any other questions about that? Okay. How many people feel they're doing well with the material and that they're going to do reasonably well on the class test? Good. Okay. And how many people feel a bit iffy? Okay, quite a few of you are feeling iffy. That's fine. You don't want to be overconfident. Do feel free, if you're feeling iffy, to, as well as taking advantage of your tutorial this week, take advantage of going to see the additional tutorial tomorrow at 2. Or find some time to spend in the lab and talk to a demonstrator. Right, we've got lots of resources available to you. If you are feeling iffy, that's fine. That just means you're not overconfident. But do take advantage of these additional resources to get up your programming strength so you can go in with confidence. Yes?
We won't have much during the week this week. Our group, so we are in a disadvantaged position.
Everybody should have a tutorial this week.
No, our tutorial is not.
Then he should have arranged a replacement. Okay, speak to me afterwards and we'll look into that. Okay, are you ready for map, filter, and fold? Okay. How many people, well, I've mentioned in class, but apart from that, how many people have heard of map reduce? Not that many. Okay. So MapReduce is the name of the central algorithm that Google uses for all of its services that lets it do things rapidly in parallel. MapReduce is named after two functions, map and fold. MapReduce. Well, fold is also called reduce sometimes. So today you will understand the essence of these things. The stuff that we cover this week is sort of the stuff near and dear to my heart about why we do this and why this is fun. So far, you've learned to write a few programs. If you've thought about it, you've noticed a lot of these programs look similar. And maybe you're not familiar with it yet, but you've realized, you know, when I've done a little bit more practice, I've got this under my belt, writing a function to apply the same, to apply another function to a list, like to square every element of a list, or to cube every element of a list, or given a list of characters, to put every character in lowercase, I'm going to get really bored doing that. They all look kind of the same. How many people felt, oh, this kind of looks the same, it could potentially get boring? Okay, a few of you have reached that point already. Believe me, just write 20 more of them and you will all get bored with them. But we don't make you write quite that many before we show you the solution, which is the key thing in all of programming, which is when you see a pattern, you want to abstract it out. You want to write the pattern down just once rather than write it down over and over and over again. So something that you will learn throughout your career is how to abstract things out rather than to write them over and over and over again. If you think about it, the whole idea behind a function, which you're doing some calculation like three, it's squaring, right? It's 3 times 3 or 5 times 5 or 91 times 91. And you go, well, there's a pattern there, and that's the square function. Well, now we're looking at our definitions of functions and finding there's a pattern there. So that's the key idea. That's what we're going to be doing. There's a required reading list. We don't need to go over that. So here's one example, right? Find the squares of all the elements in the list, and you know two ways of writing that. You can write it with a comprehension, or you can write it in this way using recursion, right? So the squares of the empty list is the empty list. The squares of the list whose head is x and whose tail is x's is x times x as the head and its tail will be squares recursively applied to the tail x's of the original list. You're all bored by that by now, right? You've seen me do that lots of times. Well, what if we want to find the ordinal of every character in the list? Remember that ordinal is this built-in function that converts a character to the integer, which is the character code. So ordinals applied to this list, well, the character code for A is 97, the character code for 2 is 50, and so on. So we could do it with a comprehension, right? Find ord of x for each x drawn from x's, or we could do it with recursion. How many people want me to go through the details of how this works? How many people are completely bored by that by now? Good. Boredom, that is the goal of this course, to get you to the point where you are bored. So now that we're bored, what do we do about it? We abstract. Yay, exactly. So what is the pattern here? The pattern is we're applying a function to every element of a list again and again. So map takes a function from A to B and a list of A, and it returns a list of B. That's very easy. Map takes two arguments, a function f and a list x's, and it returns the list you get by applying f to x for each x drawn from x's. Recursively, map f over the empty list is the empty list. Map f over the list whose head is x and whose tail is x's is, of course, for the head, apply f to x. And then cons that onto the tail, which we get by recursively mapping f over x's. So this is very similar to squares. It's so similar to squares, it's almost boring, right? Notice something very exciting happened here, but it's so obvious that you might not have noticed it. F is a formal parameter which is bound to a function. Right? Before, we've had formal parameters bound to numbers or characters or lists of numbers or lists of characters. But now, for the very first time, we have a formal parameter bound itself to a function. Very easy, very straightforward. When I first started to study computing, you did not get that in the first year class. When I was finishing my undergraduate degree, I went and read some advanced research papers, and they talked about this idea. This is how computing advances. Right? You take something that's really advanced, and you get it to the point where it's simple enough that you can run it by a first-year class, and most of them won't notice, oh, we just did something really cool. So here's some examples, right? Here's another way we can now define squares. We can just say it's map square over x's, where square of x computes x times x. So we're passing in here a function, the square function. Similarly for ords, ords of x's is just map ord over x's. And ord is a built-in primitive, so I won't give you its definition. Is that clear enough? Any questions about that? Okay. So now we'll do the same thing with filtering. So let's say we want to find everything positive in a list. So that would be 1 and 3, but not minus 2. So to find the positives in x's, it's x for x drawn from x's, where we have a guard that x is greater than 0. And the positives, written recursively, positives of the empty list is the empty list. Positives of the list with head x and tail x's, well, there's a guard on the equation. If x is greater than 0, then the head will be x, and we get the tail by recursively applying positives to x's. Otherwise, we'll drop off x, we'll throw it away, and we'll just get the list by applying positives to x's. Go like this if you're bored. Ask a question if you're not bored. Okay. And then digits is very similar. Here we're picking out the characters that are isDigits. So digits of x's is x, x drawn from x's, such that isDigit of x. And yes?
It says it should return an integer in the first definition.
Sorry?
The first definition of digit says it should return an integer. I think that's typo.
No. Yes. Yes. That's a typo. That should be a list of character. Thank you. They should, of course, both be the same. Can you write down the typos and email them to me afterwards? Thank you. What are we doing here? There we go. So, same pattern in both of those. Very easy to capture this again. Filter takes a function from type A to bool and returns, and it takes a list of A, and then it returns a list of A. So filter, we tend to call functions from a type to a Boolean predicates. You'll also have heard that word in the computation and logic part of the course, I think. How many people have heard the word predicate there? Most of you. So we'll use the letter P standing for predicate. So filter P of x's is just x for all x drawn from x's, such that P of x holds. So this returns true, then we'll keep the element, and if it returns false, we'll drop the element. Right? Recursively, it's the same pattern as before. Filter P over the empty list is the empty list. Filter P over list with head x and tail x's. We'll guard it. If P of x returns true, we'll use the equation that returns head x and tail gotten by filtering p over x's. Otherwise, we want to drop x from the list. So otherwise, we just filter p recursively over the tail x's. Clear enough? Right. And now positives can be defined by saying filter positive over x's, where we define positive of x is x greater than 0. And digits, we can get by filtering isDigit over x's. And you notice that here I didn't make the typo, right? That as you noticed, the source list and the result list should have the same type for a filter. Any questions about those two? Okay. And then the last pattern, yes, question. What do you do for a map and filter with more than one input? So if you want to do it over two lists, you could zip the lists together and do a map or filter over the zipped lists. Good question. So let's find, say we want to add up all the elements in the list, right? You know how to define sum. It's a built-in library function. If we want to define it, We can't do it with a comprehension. We must use recursion. Sum of the empty list is zero. Sum of a list with head x and tail x's is x plus recursively sum up the tail. Right, we also saw product, right, the product of a list, multiply all the numbers together. The product of the empty list is 1. The product of a list with head x and tail x's is x times recursively find the product of x's. Why is it 1? Why isn't it 0? Because 1 is the identity for multiplication. It must always be the identity here. Concatenate. Concatenate takes a list of lists and appends them all together. So concat over this list of lists. So this is a list of 2 elements. The first is list 1, 2, 3. The second is list 4, 5. And we concatenate those together. We get list 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Here's a list of 4 elements, each of which is a string. A string, of course, is a list of characters. So this is a list of 3 characters. This is a list of 3 characters. This is a list of 2 characters. This is a list of 3 characters. Concatenate them all together, and we get a list of 3 plus 3 plus 2 plus 3, 11 characters. And you see everything stays in order. So how would you define this? To concatenate the empty list, you return the empty list. To concatenate a list whose head is the list XS and whose tail is the list XSS, then we'll take the head and append it to the result of recursively concatenating the tail. Okay? So the pattern here says, given a function of 2 arguments, given an A and an A, it returns an A. And given an A, then we return a function from a list of A to an A. So this will be our combining function, and this will be what we return for the empty list. So fold R of F and A and the empty list return A. Fold R of F and A and a list whose head is X and tail is X's. Apply F to X and recursively apply fold R of F and A to X's. So now, here's another way of defining sum. The sum of X's is just the fold R of add and 0 and X's. Where add of x and y, add is just a function of 2 arguments that returns x plus y. We'll learn a more compact way of writing that later. So how does this work? Right? If we're doing this sum of 1, 2, 3, 4, where sum is defined with fold r, well, sum of x's gets replaced with fold r add 0 and x's. So x's is 1, 2, 3, 4. This is 1, 2, 3, 4. Then we go about executing it recursively, and I've not shown you the details of this. I hope you're relieved by that. Right? But we know that on the first iteration, we'll get an add 1. On the next, we'll get an add 2, and so on. So once we've executed fold R, we'll get add 1, add 2, add 3, add 4 of 0. And then add 1 of something becomes 1 plus that thing, and so on. So we've just got 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4. Plus 0 at the end, and then we get 10. Right? Why have we got 0 at the end? Because that was the extra argument to fold R, this A here. So when we reach the empty list, that becomes 0. And that's why we want it to be the identity, because we do a plus 0 at the end. We want that to leave the list unchanged. Any questions about that? Yes? Excellent question. Couldn't you, in fact, if you looked at it, realize that F could have type A to B to B, and then this could take an A and a list of B and return an A? In fact, you can do that. I'm simplifying. There's something else called fold L that takes a B to A to B and a B and a list of A and returns a list of B. So that in fact, explains why it's called fold R. So there are two different ways of doing the types. It has to do with whether you associate your binary operator to the left or right. And those are fold R and fold L. So that's in the book, and we'll talk about it more later. But I'm not working at that level of detail today. But excellent question. So sum is fold R add 0. Sorry, sum of x's is fold R add 0 of x's, where add xy is x plus y. Similarly, product is fold R of times n1 and x's, where times is just multiply. And similarly, concat is fold R of append and the empty list and x's, where append is just append. Is that clear enough? So of course, we could do all these together, right? If I'm finding the sum of the squares of the positives, I could write it this way, using squares and positives as I defined them earlier. Or I could write it with a comprehension. Or I could write it with recursion. Or, now I know I could write fold R add 0 of map square of filter positive of x's. Notice that the parentheses are important there. Where add, square, and positive are defined as given here. Okay? And we'll get that even a bit more compact by the end of today. Yes?
Instead of add, can you write plus in brackets?
The question is, instead of add, can you write plus in brackets? And I'll get to that. But indeed, there are more compact ways of doing it. Okay. That's the first half of the lecture. Right. We've actually reached dizzying heights of abstraction, but you probably never even noticed. Right. We're just taking the pattern that we've learned very thoroughly and allowing ourselves to write functions as parameters. Any questions about that? Yes? Well, it's not automatic, right? It's just following the same rules that we learned before. So, where's an example? I haven't done stupid computer for this one. Maybe I should have done. But right, what would the stupid computer do with this? It would say, you need to be strong to be to work here. Right. Where's some chalk? After all that, there's no chalk. Chalk. Right. There's nothing automatic about it. Right? Squares of 1, 2, 3 is equal to, right? Computer just applies the equation. X's matches 1, 2, 3, so you copy it out. It's map square 1, 2, 3. I should copy out the definition of square, but I won't. And now it looks at the definition of map. So the definition of map says, well, one of these two equations must apply, right? It's going to be the second one, because this is non-empty. So f is going to be square, and x is going to be the head of this list, which is, we'll try that again. X is going to be the head of the list 1, 2, 3, which is 1. And X's is going to be the tail of the list 1, 2, 3, which is the list 2, 3. Excellent. So it'll just be very stupid and copy this out. Let's see. F was square. x, x was 1. Then there's a colon. Then map is map. And f is square. And x's was the list 2, 3. And then on it goes. So when you said, oh, it just automatically applies it to a list, no, it doesn't. It's just copying it very stupidly the way it was told. And for working out what the definition means, it just copies it very stupidly the way it was told. Does that answer your question? So do you see the role of stupidity in doing all this? Good. And I don't need to go through the rest of the computation, right? You can all be stupid on your own from there on. Okay, so now we get to currying. So now, at last, I am finally going to explain this thing that looks very strange. Why, when we have a function of two arguments, do we write its type int, arrow, int, arrow, int? That doesn't really look like a function of two arguments, does it? Looks like something with two arrows in it, which makes your brain hurt, right? Well, the reason we do it is we're being extremely uniform. So add xy, right, is defined as x plus y. And what does the stupid computer do? It says, well, add 3, 4. X will be 3, y will be 4. Copy out the right-hand side. X will be 3, then a plus. Y is 4, so I've got 3 plus 4. Oh, and that's 7. Okay, so we know that bit. But what's going on here? What's going on when we write add is, in fact, the computer always puts in the parentheses here in a way that you might not have thought of. When you write int to int to int, what it means is int to int to int. So it's actually a function of one argument which returns a function. Right? We've had functions as arguments. Here we have functions as results. You've been using functions as results the whole time without realizing it. So the parentheses, when you don't write them in, for types, go to the right. And for applications, go to the left. So when I write add xy, it really means add x, apply, well, it means add applied to x, and that thing applied to y. So now when I've said add 3, 4, it means add 3 applied to 4. So add 3, right, we've given it an integer 3, it will return a function from int to int. So add 3 is the name of a function. What function is add 3? The function that adds 3 to things, right, which later we'll learn can be more compactly written 3 plus in Haskell. Okay? So add 3 is the function that adds 3 to things, and you apply that to 4, and then you get 3 plus 4, which is 7. So the lesson here is that a function of two numbers, or in general a function of two things, is the same as a function on the first thing that returns a function of the second thing. So here's another way of looking at this. Add of x is a function, f. It's the function that adds its argument to x. So in particular, add 3 of 4 is f of 4, where f of y is the function that adds 3 to y. And you can see, well, if we copy things out, f of 4, let's see, what's f of 4, where f of y is 3 plus y. So here's my actual 4, here's my formal y. Copy out the body with y replaced by the actual, so I've got 3 plus y is really 4, so I've got 3 plus 4. That's how it works out what's going on. When we were writing something that looked really simple, like add xy equals x plus y, in fact, in the middle of it, it was actually asking as if we defined add x as f, where f of y is x plus y. And know something clever that happens when it's being stupid, right? When we said add 3 of 4, and it's copying out what add 3 means. It's actually f here, where f of y is 3 plus y. Why is it 3 here? Because x, we know, matched 3. I've actually not been stupid enough here, right? This should have been f, where f of y is 3 plus y, applied to 4, which happens to then be equal to this. We'll say a bit more about that later. Now, this idea is called hurrying. It's named after Haskell Curry, who wrote books on logic that made use of this idea. So people got used to calling it currying because Curry wrote the first widely read books on this topic in logic. But in fact, it was pointed out that the idea goes back much further. So I read something that said, well, really it should have been called Schoenfinkeling, but currying sounded tastier. But this, it turns out, was wrong, because many years later I read the original work on logic by Gottlob Frege, who really developed all the logic that we use in modern times. I'll say more about him later in the course. And Frege also has the idea of currying. So really, I was taught when I was young, it shouldn't be called currying, it should be called Schoenfinkeling, but in fact it should be called Fregeing, which I guess shortens to something like frigging, which many of you might think is appropriate. It's a bit of a mind-bending idea. We don't have functions of two arguments. We only have functions of one argument that themselves return a function of another argument. So everything can be done just using functions of one argument. That's sort of cool, isn't it? You don't need the notion of functions of two arguments. You can get away with just functions of one argument. Nice and uniform and simple and completely mind-bending. Well, we can actually take advantage of that to simplify our programs a bit, because remember I said sum of x's is fold r of add 0 of x's, where fold r has this type. But now we know where the parentheses go. We know that this isn't really a function of 1, 2, 3 different things. It's really a function of one thing that returns a function of 2 other things. And that function of 2 other things is really a function of one thing that returns another function. So this list of a to a at the end is actually a separate function. We can take advantage of that by saying sum is fold r of add and 0. Instead of saying sum of x's is fold r of add and 0 and x's, we can just say sum is fold r of add and 0 and define the function directly as a function. And to see how that works, if I define sum of x's is fold r of add 0 and x's, right, the stupid computer says, oh, okay, so I've got sum of 1, 2, 3, 4, so x's is 1, 2, 3, 4, so I copy out the right-hand side with x's replaced by 1, 2, 3, 4, and I get fold r of add and 0 and 1, 2, 3, 4. What does the stupid computer do over here? We've told it sum is fold r of add and 0, and it says, okay, I need to know sum of 1, 2, 3, 4, but sum is fold r of add and 0, so I replace sum by fold r of add and 0. And I leave the 1, 2, 3, 4 the same. Right? So it just didn't need to look at the 1, 2, 3, 4 at all when doing that. It could just expand out the definition of sum, and then we get the right thing. Question?
Besides turning first-year grades to watch, what's the advantage?
It's all of 4 characters shorter. And it turns your brain to mush.
6 actually, because we need less spaces.
Oh yeah, we don't need the spaces. 6 characters shorter. So that doesn't seem like a big advantage. But as we move on, you'll see more and more programs getting shorter and shorter. But excellent question. That's exactly the question you should ask. So now we can say sum is fold r of add and 0, and product is fold r of times and 1. And concat is fold r of append and empty list. Okay. So this is a big pain, right? We don't really want to say add and square and positive and then define them separately. Wouldn't it be nice to just write, instead of add there, just do the addition. Instead of map there, do the squaring. Instead of filter, say it's the thing greater than zero. So the obvious thing to do is to just write these in place. And instead of say fold R of add, say fold R of x plus y. And instead of map of square, say map of x times x. And instead of saying filter of positive, say filter of x greater than zero. I've seen lots of people just do this very, very naturally. This seems like the natural way to simplify things. But it's too simple. Can people see what's wrong with doing this?
X and y are not defined.
Right. X and y are unbound variables. They are not defined. And notice, furthermore, that the x here and the x here are going to mean rather different things. Right? Because this x is going to be bound to the square, whereas this x is bound to the thing being squared. So these aren't even the same x. So it's a very natural thing to do. I've seen people done it many times. Right? If I'm too sleepy, I will do the same thing myself, or if I've had too much to drink. But you don't want to do this. It doesn't make sense. But there's something very similar which does make sense. What we do is we say, well, look, we don't need the name add here. We just say, need to say it's a function of two things, x and y, that returns x plus y. Instead of saying square, we can say it's a function of one thing, x, that returns x times x. And for positive, we can say, well, it's a function of one thing, x, that returns whether x is greater than 0. So you write this little backslash and an arrow in front for each argument. This backslash, the reason we use a backslash is that when this was first done by logicians, they used the Greek letter lambda. So the way they write backslash x greater than 0 is lambda x greater than 0, and so on for the other ones. And this idea is due to the logician Alonzo Church, who was a contemporary of Curry. So the way this works, right, is if you say lambda x greater than 0 applied to 3, stupid computer says, oh, it's a lambda expression. The bound variable is x. The actual is 3. So I just copy this out, replacing x by 3. So x is 3, and I copy it out. X, that's 3. Greater than, that's greater than. 0, that's 0. 3 greater than 0. That's true. Okay, so this evaluates to true. Similarly, lambda x goes to x times x applied to 3. Again, it says, oh, lambda expression, x is the bound variable. Replace x by 3, so I copy this out with x replaced by 3, and I get 3 times 3. Pretty straightforward. Functions of two arguments are, of course, really just a function of one argument that itself returns a function of one argument. So lambda x, lambda y, x plus y applied to 3, applied to 4, is just lambda x, which returns this thing, applied to 3. So stupid computer says, right, we'll copy out the body with x replaced by 3. Lambda y, copy that out, arrow, copy that out, x, oops, x is 3, write a 3 there, plus, copy it out, y, copy it out. So lambda x, lambda y, x plus y applied to 3 becomes lambda y, 3 plus y, which is then applied to 4, does the same thing, copies it out with the y replaced by 4, and we get 3 plus 4. So you can see how currying works very directly here. Here is the function that adds 3 to things, lambda y, 3 plus y. And then taking advantage of that, we can do an even more compact notation. Right, you remember that plus, which we write infix, is just shorthand. Right, writing 3 plus 4 is just shorthand for the function plus applied to 3 and 4. So we can do things much more compactly. So as well as plus being shorthand for lambda x, lambda y, x plus y, that's really what's going on here. Times is shorthand for this. Append is shorthand for this. Similarly, if you write just one argument, it expands it out. So greater than 0 is shorthand for lambda x greater than 0. 2 times is shorthand for lambda x 2 times x. Plus 1, notice it comes after instead of before, whoops, is shorthand for lambda x, x plus 1. 2 up arrow is shorthand for lambda x 2 raised to the x power. And up arrow 2 is shorthand for lambda x, x raised to the 2 power. So what's 2 up arrow applied to 3? 2 raised to the 3rd power, which is 8. What's up arrow 2 applied to 3? Right. 3, up arrow 2 applied to 3 is 3 up arrow 2, which is 3 squared, which is 9. 3 raised to the 2nd power. So the order here matters. So now, instead of writing fold R lambda x lambda y x plus y and map lambda x x times x and filter lambda x x greater than 0, I can just write fold R plus map up arrow 2 filter greater than 0. Okay? Yes? No, no, of course you can write any number there you want, right? You can write up arrow 100 to raise something to the 100th power. Or up arrow 3 to cube something. Well, now things have gotten really compact, right? Sum is fold R plus and 0. Product is fold R times and 1. Concat is fold R of double plus and empty list. Of course, the parentheses around plus are important here. Otherwise, the stupid computer will think you're trying to add fold R and 0. And here I'll think you're trying to multiply fold R and 1. So the parentheses are necessary. Well, now we can go one step better and define functions that combine functions. So the important one is composition, which says, which is written dot, and we say f dot g of x is just f of g of x. So for example, if square is squaring and pos is greater than 0, then pos dot square of 3 is the same as pos of square and 3. Of course, the square of 3 is 9, so it's the same as pos of 9, which is true. So now I can say pos dot square for the function that checks if the square is positive. It's sort of a stupid function, right? Because the square is positive as long as the argument is non-zero. So now, there are two different ways I could write things. Second typo, please, to send to me. Right? Here I've written pos square, and here I've written square pos. Square pos should, of course, be pos square. So we've got pos square of 3. Did you get that down? Thanks. Pos square of 3 is pos of square of 3, which is pos of 9, which is true. Or we could say pos square of 3, if we define it as just as pos dot square. Pos square of 3 is pos dot square of 3, which is pos of square of 3, which is pos of 9, which is true. So now we're working at a higher level. And this is okay, right, if you've just got two things, but if you've got three or four or more, it avoids nesting parentheses, which is really good. I don't know about you, but nested parentheses make my head hurt. If I can avoid them, I am much happier. So as an example, instead of saying f of x is fold r of plus of 0 of open parenthesis, map of open parenthesis raised to the 2nd power, close parenthesis, of open parenthesis, filter of greater than 0 of x's, close parenthesis, I can just say f is fold r plus 0 composed with map of the squaring function, composed with filter of greater than 0. No nested parentheses. So somebody said before, why on earth would I want to do this thing that melts my brain? It's because now you don't need to nest parentheses. And that's maybe not a big thing, but I don't know about you, but once I've gotten used to it, I found this a much easier way to think than this. Oh, just these three functions composed together. And you can think of it as bits of pipe that you stick together or something like that. So it lets us work at a higher level thinking in terms of functions without going down to the individual values. There is